Hi, readers. Welcome to Books Connect Us from Penguin Random House. This is a podcast about staying connected with each other and the stories and authors who inspire us. Fiona Davis is the New York Times bestselling author of several novels, including The Dollhouse, The Address, The Masterpiece, and The Chelsea Girls. Her latest is The Magnolia Palace, a tantalizing novel about the secrets, betrayal, and murder within one of New York City's most impressive Gilded Age mansions. Today, Fiona is in conversation with Xavier Solomon, the deputy director, and Peter J. Sharp, chief curator, at the Frick in New York City.
I am Xavier Solomon. I'm the deputy director and Peter J. Sharp, chief curator at the Frick Collection. Welcome to Frick Madison, our temporary new home on Madison Avenue, where the collection is temporarily housed. We're in the Fragonard Room, one of the key spaces where some of the great works of art of the collection are on display. And of course, this room features prominently in the wonderful book, The Magnolia Palace. And we're very lucky to have with us today the author of this book, best-selling writer and novelist, Fiona Davis.
Thank you.
Welcome. It's great to have you here in this room,
yes,
which is an important room for your novel as well,
yes,
in a number of ways.
Yes, very much so.
So how did you decide to focus on the Frick and the Frick family for the Magnolia Palace?
Yeah, you know, the building came first. I've always loved the Frick. And if you ask any New Yorker what their favorite museum is, they tend to say the Frick. It's like a secret gem. It's not like the Met or the Guggenheim. It's different. And what I was really attracted to was the fact that it was first a mansion, a residence, and then it became a museum. So as someone who writes dual timeline novels, that's great because then you can really compare and contrast how the people inside the building have changed as well as how the city of New York has changed.
Yeah, and I think that comes out so vividly in the book. And for someone like me working at the Frick, I loved sort of diving into the everyday life of the mansion, mm-hmm, which of course is something that we've all sort of worked on and studied, but somehow your book really makes it alive and so real. I thought that was really, really wonderful. And it must have been incredible for you to really get into the sort of brains and personalities of all these different characters, these real life characters.
Yeah, oh, it was so much fun. It was so much fun to just, you know, research from what happened in the building over time, you know, finding payrolls of all the staff. So you could see all 27 staff members who worked there in 1916, what they did, how much they got paid. And when you write historical fiction, you're looking for those details. And what was incredible was the archives for the Frick had all of those details right there for me, you know, from photos of the bedrooms in the 1930s before it transitioned into a museum. And so I could really, in my head, just imagine what it was like and place characters inside.
I loved how accurate your book is in terms of all the historical information. You know, of course, it's a fictional work.
Yeah.
So you've created a lot of extra stories and characters around it, but the core of it, mm-hmm, is really the Frick family, the Frick household, the museum, the works of art. How do you go about researching this? I mean, of course, you've done this for many other books in New York City.
Yeah, you know, I have to say I was very intimidated by the art. You know, I took a course pass-fail in art history in college, so I figured, hey, you should write a book about this.
Of course.
Right? And so what was amazing was as you research the art on the Frick website, you can click on any painting and get a full, you know, here's where it came from, here's the story behind it. And for me, that's what I'm looking for, is the story behind the story of the artwork. And so in terms of the research, it was reading biographies of the Fricks, who are an interesting family, and then deciding what year to set the first timeline, which was 1919, which is a really dynamic time in the family life because that's when Henry Clay Frick passed away, and there was just a lot going on there. And luckily, there's just a lot of information out there about them. I found a 1939 New Yorker profile on Helen Frick, and it described her as a woman of extremely robust prejudices and went on to list a lot about her. But what I really was attracted to was the fact that these people were really complex, but they had contradictions. They were vulnerable. They were tough. You know, Mr. Frick is an interesting person in history. And, you know, it's a complex story. No one's either black or white in this. And so I'm very curious, since you know the Fricks in a way, having worked in their building for so long, how was that in terms of getting it right of their personalities or the dynamic within the family?
I think there were some surprises for me, but the core of it, again, I thought it was so beautifully researched and so beautifully brought to life. And that's what I loved about it. So, you know, of course, these are all characters that I never met. Mm-hmm. You know, they all passed away long before I was born or I worked here. Yeah. But I've spent a lot of my life dealing with them in a way. And I really like what you just said about the complexities of the characters. Every single one of them, you know, Mr. Frick, Mrs. Frick, Miss Frick, they're all incredibly complex. People who clearly had a lot of, you know, great ideas and did wonderful things, but also had some much darker sides. And I love that you don't shy away from that. I mean, you bring that to the fore, but there are moments when you sort of think, gosh, you know, Miss Frick, if I'd worked for her, I would have strangled this person. But then there are incredible moments of, you know, understanding what she's also gone through and where she comes from. And of course, a lot of personal tragedies in the family. To me, the big character that surprised me was Charles Frick, was the son, mm-hmm. because it's a character that in the story of the museum doesn't figure very prominently. But of course, I learned many things from the book and I started thinking of him and seeing him also as a complex and different character than what I was thinking. It really made me think of the house in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what I loved early on is I got this behind the scenes tour of the Frick in January of 2020. And to go in there and learn that there's a bowling alley in the basement that still works, that was built in 1914. And to think as an author, you're thinking there has to be a scene down here, right? Yeah. I have to include this. And then to go up to the maids' rooms and see what that was like and imagine what their view was like across the park. Yeah. You know, for me, that's just so satisfying to get into a place and start to see it in a new light. But then to just walk the halls and even though it's so beautiful and there's sunlight streaming in every window, it's the paintings. It's yeah. always about the paintings.
Absolutely.
And so to include a scavenger hunt in there where, you know, you can get to know these paintings a little more and see how they reflect on the family and on the people who work there and live there was so much fun.
So I was trying to follow the leads as well whenever they were there and trying to guess which painting you were talking about. And I have to confess, I didn't always manage. And then, of course, when the next step comes in the book, I was always like, of course, you know, I should have thought of that. But what drew you to those specific, you know, obviously you're not talking about every painting at the Frick Collection. You're making a selection of mm-hmm. some of the greatest works, but also some surprising one. Yeah. What brought you to that and what caught your attention in terms of choosing the works for
yeah.
the scavenger hunt?
It's a great question. I definitely knew the Fragonard panels right. had to be here, the Progress of Love, mm. you know, because it's such an important work in the building and within the family. And so I was really drawn to them. And here it's so interesting because they feel so enormous. You can really breathe them in. And I can just imagine what the character was like as she was, you know, came into the room to be interviewed. In the book, this is the room where the two main characters, Helen Frick and Lillian, meet as Lillian interviews to become her private secretary. And of course, it goes terribly wrong because she's completely unqualified. But it's the paintings as they look at them and discuss them that bring them together. Yeah. And so you hope that the characters can find a spark because they're very different.
Absolutely.
And to show them. And I love that it's about courtship. Mm. And so that it kind of foreshadows Helen's courtship in the book, Helen Frick and her almost engagement. And then I also was interested in the fact that the statues in the backgrounds are very important. And I hadn't realized that
right.
just looking at them. But as I was saying, you know, I wrote this book during lockdown. And thank goodness that the Frick has an amazing website with a floor plan where I could jump into any room virtually and look around and see it as the character would. And so, for example, here I could look around the room and say, okay, she would be drawn to that statue or that one. And what would she think of it? Because the woman who's being interviewed for the private secretary position is an artist's muse and has posed for sculpture around Manhattan, so she knows this.
And of course, she's a statue herself at the entrance of the building. So
yes.
this idea, I love this idea of you know, the model for the statue over the entrance of the mansion and then the museum comes to life through the character of Lillian, which is a fictional character, but it's also based on a very real character.
And that's what's fun, is to find characters who were real people and create a character that's inspired by them. But the challenge here was I knew I had to include the Fricks. It's not like I could write about this book without writing about the actual family. And so their personalities just jump off the page as well. What I love is so many readers have reached out to me and say, oh, my favorite character hands down is Helen Frick. And she was the one I was most worried about because, you know, she is a mix of contradictions in many ways.
I mean, you know, we are the Frick Collection because we were founded by Henry Clay Frick, but I always feel Helen Clay is as much of a founder as he is.
Yes.
And so much of our collection is shaped by her. I mean, she actually was involved with the house, with the museum, way longer than he was. I mean, he only lived there in the mansion 5 years. She lived until the 1980s.
And was on shaping the board.
The board, acquiring, creating the library. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a huge amount to be thankful to her for. And as a single woman who never married, never had a family, in a way the museum was her life, her family. Yeah. And I think that comes out, again, very well in the book. And, as a difficult character. I mean, she's not. But not having met her, I feel that you brought her to life very, very well. And I know that a family member who knew her read your book, and she thought it was very accurate.
Oh,
so
day
that
made.
Was, yeah, that I think the Frick family, as far as I know, who read the book, all really loved it and thought it was wonderful. So
that's great.
There are lots of stories, of course, about Miss Frick in her old age with her nieces and nephews.
Yes.
And
what was really interesting was being able to virtually go around the museum and pick these paintings that reflect what the characters are thinking or what they're thinking about. For example, The Forge, which is a big one. Why did Henry Frick buy that? Was he, you know, inspired by the blacksmiths and his work in steel? And just to wonder how they came about and how they chose each one is so much fun.
And it's one of the questions that as a curator I get asked almost most often about the museum, you know, why did Frick buy this? What did Frick like? Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what we don't have in the archives.
Yeah.
You know, he was very shy and didn't write about the reasons behind his acquisitions. So we, in a way, have a blank canvas as to why these objects are here and why they were brought together. And then, you know, writers like you and everyone else can build a story out of that.
I remember asking, what's the most popular painting at the Frick? And I was told it was the Bellini, St. Francis in the Desert. And they said that the carpet in front of it is often worn out quicker than anywhere else. And I just loved that detail. And so I had to put that in the book.
No, and it was wonderful. I mean, you obviously spent a lot of time researching this book and talking to many people at the Frick and the archive, because there were so many moments like that in the book for someone like me working at the museum where I thought, this person has done her homework. She knows exactly what she's writing about.
Yeah, and there's another painting that I really loved was Lady Hamilton as Nature. Yeah. And for me, because I'm dealing with these two women in the book who are models, so there's the sculptor's muse in the 1910s, and then you have this kind of Vogue fashion model in the 1960s. And that painting I found so interesting because it's this beautiful woman holding a dog, and you think, oh, it's, you know, lovely. And then you learn about the woman behind it, and she had a pretty tragic life, and she was a muse. And really, her success depended on the men she surrounded herself with.
Absolutely.
And she was very dependent on that. And so to have my model in the 60s learn her story and have it reflect on what she's doing as a model. And so in that way, it's so helpful kind of to bring out the theme of the book, which is what's the difference between being looked at and then what's the difference between actually being seen?
Yeah.
And just that one painting could encapsulate all of that for me.
And the question of agency is a very important one. I mean, we're in the right place actually to talk about it, because the Fragonard Room is a series of panels painted by a man, but for a woman patron. And one of the things that is not discussed, I feel, very often is the fact that once you look at the canvases, the protagonist in each canvas is the woman. You know, the man is the accessory to the woman. It's an unusual way of depicting a couple as to what we're used to thinking about a couple. You know, there's the husband and the wife, but here it's about the woman. And your book is really about women. I mean, the characters are all women. I mean, Henry Clay Frick is there, Charles Frick is there, but they're almost in the background in a way. I mean, it's Helen, it's Lillian, it's the other characters in the 1960s.
Yeah, I love trying to capture how New York has changed over time and how women's agency and voices have changed over time and how they haven't. And so you can do that so well with a dual timeline book in many ways. And it helps so much that the artwork is perfect for that. Virtue and Vice, the Veronese. Yeah. And you have these three characters, two women kind of fighting over one man. And again, for me, that's helpful because it echoes the love triangle in the book. And it also gives the character a way to have to respond to Mr. Frick when he says, all right, what does this mean? Yeah. And she gets it completely wrong. And it's just such a dynamic painting with so much movement and color. And so it's so helpful to me as an author because it can serve many roles, that one painting.
Well, as a focus that comes and goes as well. And I think, you know, what was very clever about the scavenger hunt is that the works appear and disappear and for different purposes at different points as you go through the book.
Right.
And so the light shining on different pictures in the house and literally in the darkness of, you know, them
right.
being locked in a snowstorm in the house, which in itself is an amazing idea. You know, I wonder if anyone from the public will hide trying to get locked into the museum in the future. But it's everybody's dream, you know, night at the museum, sort of being
exactly.
closed in a place like that and communing with the works of art in a different way.
And I remember reading that Mr. Frick would go into the West Gallery at night and look at the paintings under darkness.
Yeah, smoking his cigar and like sitting on a couch and looking at art. But you know, when you're surrounded by these great works of art, I often do the same. I mean, I'm not like Mr. Frick, but I don't smoke a cigar. But you know, in the evening, working at the museum, it's some of the most beautiful times is early morning or evening when you're alone and you can actually go through or with your colleagues sometimes and just sort of sit and think about a work. And I always talk with the director as well. And I know he does it as a rule almost every day. He goes around first thing in the morning. And I try to do that as much as I can. So it's the fortune of, you know, now inhabiting in a way an ex-mansion, now a museum. Mm-hmm. But it's wonderful that this mansion is also open to everyone and the public and people can come and witness it and be part of it and learn from it in ways that I think Frick would be very proud of.
And that's his legacy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking both Mr. Frick and Miss Frick, I think, would have loved reading your book. And I can't imagine them sort of being very proud of the fact that, you know, their lives, you know, in their complex ways and their legacy especially, is still something that is valuable to us today in New York in the 2020s and meaningful. Thank you for joining us. We are at Frick Madison, which is our temporary home at the moment of the Frick Collection on Madison and East 75th Street. The mansion is undergoing renovation, but of course the mansion is the center of the Magnolia Palace, and you can learn so much about it through this wonderful book. And come and visit us at Frick Madison, where you can see many of the works of art discussed by Fiona in the book. Thank you so much, Fiona, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Books Connect Us. For more great book recommendations and information about your favorite authors, feel free to follow Penguin Random House on social media or visit penguinrandomhouse.com. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, go ahead and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps more listeners to find our show. This podcast is produced by Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. I've been Erin Leaf, and until next time, this has been Books Connect Us.